Welcome to this episode of The Cyber Show, and we're here with We The Builders, with Kate and Milo. Kate and Milo, please tell us, what do you do? What is We The Builders?
We The Builders is a website that is in reaction to what is happening in the United States with the government. We were born a month after the inauguration, at a time when we noticed that what was happening wasn't being translated very well in the media. People were panicking, people are confused, and we are former U.S. Digital Service employees with technical knowledge, both very specific within parts of the U.S. government, but also with general knowledge of how things work. One of the things that we did while we were in government was explain to people in higher parts of the government, like, how to reason about complicated technical topics. So we have this communication skill set on top of being engineers, designers, product managers, operations, communications type people that used to do this kind of work before DOGE took over the U.S. Digital Service. That was our birthplace, being able to communicate and share information about what federal workers do in the United States, about explaining the current events and helping people to reason about them, because it's complicated, and we want to be able to give people the information that we have in a way that they can digest.
Which is probably one of the biggest issues that we're seeing in the US at the moment, and have been for some time, is that information is highly controlled, one-sided. So people don't know where to go when they're feeling scared and feeling alone and they're seeing news. They do need somewhere, and having a platform with experts is exactly what you need. It's very difficult to argue against people who have done that before and who know what they're doing. And then that's a bigger problem that we're having across online, is that people who are not experts are becoming sort of self-proclaimed experts and will then have a fight and none of them are correct. So it's really, really good to have a space that we have that.
Yep. It is hard sometimes to talk about the work that is being done in government. The government in the United States has forgotten to talk about the work that it does in a way that is accessible and meaningful to people. Pretty much since Watergate, the government has shrunk from promoting all of the good things that it has done and trying to just stay out of the way. In some ways, it's a great credit that the government is able to do all of the things that it can do in a way that is almost completely invisible to people. Like that in some ways is a gift. But there are absolutely times that you need to point to some amazing thing that you do and be like, look, we did this for you. We did this because of you guys. And government lost that skill. And both Kate and I spent years in the digital service, saw instances where something great was being worked on and no one wanted to talk about it. And you would say to the agencies that we worked with, hey, do you want to write something about this? Do you want to promote this? And they would be like, no, absolutely not. And so for most Americans, the narrative about what government does is entirely controlled by those who want to undermine and destroy it. Usually the only times that people think about their interactions with government is when they pay taxes or when they go to court. And so they view their two primary interactions as almost entirely negative and completely miss all of the other things that government does. Like, it does not register for them that EMS services are in many cases government, or that the internet was built by the government, or like even digital camera technology that we use around the world and all of this amazing stuff was built at NASA. Like, none of that gets spoken about or highlighted. And so people just have this purely negative view of government. We wanted to push back on that. And we also wanted to inform our partners in media so they knew how to talk about it, because it is so complex and it is so big and it is so challenging.
Yes, I'm sure.
against this background of what's been called the systematic dismantling of the entire digital infrastructure of government, to understand the value of these systems that are being dismantled and why they exist in the first place, and the ostensible reasons that the current US administration is doing this is on the basis, the idea of funding, that it's all about money and that it's about efficiency and so on. The real sort of economics, social economics of this, what is being destroyed, what is its value, and, you know, what's it being destroyed for?
In terms of pure economic value, in the United States, billions of dollars get paid out every year through Social Security, and billions of dollars get paid out through Medicare and Medicaid. So in the US, we have two different systems that provide healthcare through the government. Medicare is the healthcare that is provided to seniors after you retire, and that is kind of the really big one. And then Medicaid is the healthcare that is provided to people who are in poverty and are unable to afford health insurance through the market or maybe aren't employed. Those two systems alone account for over $1 trillion worth of payments to Americans every year. So in terms of pure economics, it's a massive amount of the United States economy and the world economy. And so at the macro level, these systems, if they go down, it's not just a catastrophe for the US economy, it's a catastrophe for the world economy, as we're seeing, as the tariffs and other things are getting bantered about and implemented and then not, you know, implemented, you see the effects. And so if these systems go down, it's a massive problem. And then if you think about it, the micro level, if a person does not get their Social Security check, they can't afford electricity, they can't afford their groceries. So it's destructive at both levels. And for a lot of Americans who are receiving Social Security, for example, because they are older, many of them are not able to go into the office to get help that they need. It's difficult to get someone on the phone. And in the name of efficiency, they want to reduce the number of offices you can go to. They want to reduce the services that you can access over the phone. And they are not pushing more of the services online. Not that you even should necessarily build everything online when the people who are your primary recipients, your primary beneficiaries, aren't comfortable or able to navigate everything online.
Absolutely. This looks like an attack upon some of the most vulnerable people in society. And some of the hallmarks of it seem to be its arbitrariness and cruelty. Surely this is outside of financial economics. This is storing up so much social malaise, negativity, resentment for the future, people becoming sick, lost opportunities, anger. It does seem to be almost like poking a hornet's nest with a stick. It's provocative in my perception of it. What I'd like you to speak to, and because you're experts here, is a bit more internally. Who are the people that are being targeted? Because I know people are being fired, they're being selected for ideological reasons, for political reasons, for their beliefs and so on. What systems are being targeted, and why are those systems specifically being singled out, and how? Maybe we could talk a little bit about the technical measures that are being taken, infiltration, exfiltration of data, deliberate sabotage of systems and so on.
In terms of how they're firing people, they're doing what's easiest first. So they're coming for probationary employees who are not only people new to working in federal government, but also people who have switched jobs. So for instance, if I went from my job at US Digital Service and went over to work at the Internal Revenue Service, I would be under probationary status, even though I had already been in government for over 2 years. So that's the first thing, you know, get your quick wins. If you're thinking as a product manager, where are your quick wins? Get those people out because you can. There are opportunistic things. There's been a couple of ideological firings that we know about. And so that's another piece of it. And then the other thing that they're doing is provoking the system. They are firing those probationary employees, but our courts move very slow, as courts do. And what we're seeing is that they're being forced to hire those people back, and then they're going to find another way. So they're poking the system to find the weak spots. And the other thing that we don't talk about enough is that all of our societies run on implicit rules that we agree upon. We agree to follow the rule of law. We agree that the government is good and we trust in it. Some people do. But there are all these implied rules in our households, in our neighborhoods, and, you know, nationwide. And those are all being blown away. The things that they're doing are coming in and just blowing by those implicit rules, and the explicit rules aren't ready. That's how they're coming in. That's what we're seeing. That's what I've been observing.
Yeah. One of the more concrete examples, in the US, federal employees generally are given a certain level of protection because the theory is that they could be asked to do things that are unethical or illegal, and they should have the ability to say no without endangering their job. And so we have what's called the Merit Systems Protection Board, which is a council that will hear cases where people are being fired or people are being put on administrative leave. And if you're a civil servant and you object to some order or command from leadership, you can go to the Merit Systems Protection Board and ask for them to rule. And there are a set of norms that have kept that in place. And one of the things that the current administration is doing is to remove the people who were put on the board that were placed there by Democratic administrations and leave it so that there's only Republican appointed members on the board, and there's not enough for them to actually make a decision anyway because they don't have a majority. So if you get fired, then you don't have anyone to appeal to. They also want to change the way that the civil service is structured. People at the top level of the civil service, they want to put them into a system called Schedule F. And what that means is that you can be fired at will. So without any other protections, they can just say, oh, you didn't do what we wanted, therefore we're firing you today, which is antithetical to how bureaucracies should be structured and how they should work and the protections for people in them. So it is very much an attack on the ability for civil servants to object. And so there's a case at Social Security that we highlighted last week where someone in Social Security was ordered to put immigrants onto what's called the Death Master File, which is a database at Social Security that tracks people after they have died. And that system fans out to all kinds of different institutions in the United States, not just federal, but state and even private institutions. So if you're placed on the Death Master File, Social Security will notify the credit reporting bureaus, who then notify credit cards, that then notify banks. And so if you are dead, then your credit cards get turned off and your bank accounts get put on hold and you're not able to apply for a job. And the theory that the current administration is using is, even though these immigrants are not dead, we put them on there and they will leave the country because they can't access their money, they cannot access jobs, they can't travel, they can't do any of these things. They said that they were going to decimate their financial lives and that they would choose to self-deport. And so there was a deputy commissioner at Social Security who said, I'm not going to allow this because it's an illegal and unethical order, and they fired him.
You're listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk. So essentially, the system has been weaponized against people for the sake of some political party's ideology. What's the technical side of that? Like, how does that happen? I know that you mentioned that there's a bit of a web when it comes to a lot of the government systems. How does your retirement or your pension, are they on combined systems? So if you attack one system, does it then attack other systems or potentially cause chaos in other systems?
Yeah, they're all interconnected at Social Security, and there is not a separate system for U.S. citizens versus immigrants. So if you're an immigrant and you're going through the visa process, you can get a social security number before you are a U.S. citizen, and then you are in those same systems as U.S. citizens. And so it's entirely possible that you could put U.S. citizens onto the death master file without even knowing it. It could be accidental, and it does happen from time to time. Transpose two numbers in the social security number, and then someone is accidentally declared dead. It's fine if it's accidental, and there are processes that you can go through to correct that. But when it's being weaponized as technology, that's a problem, especially when the Social Security Administration sends that information out to Medicare, and then your health insurance is turned off and you can no longer see a doctor, the way all of those different systems interact with each other.
So how do you de-weaponize that system? Because potentially, if you're weaponizing that system now, and say the political landscape completely changes in the next 4 years, how do you de-weaponize that if it's already been weaponized? And can you do that? How easy is it to go back and change it all, right? That's like pushing a button or going back and update or going back and doing a migration somewhere.
Once the data becomes not trustworthy, that you people are purposefully being placed on that death master file, what can we trust? If, you know, my neighbors, if I live in a part of the country where there's a lot of Central American immigrants, so the people that they're targeting are very much my neighbors. And if they're all on the death master file, how are they going to feed their families? If you're working 2 or 3 jobs, as a lot of my neighbors are, the people, because my kids go to a school with a lot of recent immigrants and other people without a lot of opportunity, people in poverty. And those people work their tails off. Like, I never see them in the school, not because I've met the parents, and they're not, they're involved, but they're working. And if they're working 3 jobs, how are they going to drive to the Social Security office, you know, now that they've closed, to declare themselves not dead? They're just going to shift how they work and how they receive their money. But de-weaponizing, how do you stop this? Well, first, the death master file is not a technical thing. This is a policy, and I'm going to air quote policy because it's not an official policy. It's an implied policy. So how do you do it? You hit the streets, the courts gotta work, and they have to listen to the courts, which is not something we can change. But that's when you get into the streets and you're protesting, you're pointing out that this is illegal, we won't accept it. That's the ultimate de-weaponization, is making sure that they know not to do this anymore. How do you enforce that? The way that the US government was constructed, a set of checks and balances. The executive branch enforces the court's actions. And the courts check that the executive branch is not doing things that are illegal. The executive nominates the judges here in the United States, and Congress confirms them, specifically the Senate, our higher part of Congress. The other thing that Congress does is pass the laws to be implemented by the executive branch and overseen by the judicial. They don't pass a lot of laws right now.
Congress has the power to delegate authority as well. So one of the reasons why the executive branch has gotten so strong in the United States is because as the world has gotten more complex, Congress has basically said, when they create new agencies, they've basically said, we're going to delegate rulemaking authority to whatever agency. And that agency can then come up with policy and enforce it. So that's one of the big fights that has been happening in the courts in the US in the last couple of years, especially around like the Environmental Protection Agency. If you look at the legislation that created it, there's not a lot of detail about what the EPA can do or should be doing. The House and the Senate basically said that the EPA would figure it out. And now the conservative forces are trying to tightly curtail what they can do and prevent them from acting. From a tactical level, getting back to the technical details, there was a recent whistleblower report from the National Labor Relations Board, which is the agency that's responsible for dealing with workers' rights and especially around unions. And so they have a lot of information about workers and a lot of information about unions, which has been another one of the bulwarks against fascism and against this kind of digital coup that is happening. What we saw in that whistleblower's report was that the folks from Doge are going through and getting what they call tenant account rights, which is basically the maximum level rights that you can get. A lot of the actions that are taken at the tenant level aren't logged. They aren't tracked because that is the level that Microsoft runs at when they're helping you solve an issue. And you don't want your logs full of all of the different things that they're doing, theoretically. And they were actively turning off all of the monitoring and all of the logging and all of the different systems that controlled what the chief information security officers and their...
Whoa, this is from a cybersecurity point of view. I mean, let's just be clear. This is an absolute smoking gun, isn't it? This is attacker behavior.
Yeah, 100%. They are acting as attackers, not as any kind of actual government employee. And at the very beginning of administration, Musk said that they were going to do everything in full transparency, but they're actively turning off all of the ability for people to actually see what they're doing. And so that is not transparency to me, unless, I've made this joke before, unless they're saying transparent like a ghost and they are acting as ghosts in the shell, because you literally can't see the actions that they're taking. And so if they are exfiltrating data out of the system, you don't know because they've turned off the logging. If they are installing backdoors into servers, you don't know because they've turned off your ability to monitor that and to view traffic. So every action that they are taking is being done to prevent whoever comes after them to know how to undo it and to know what damage they have caused and what information they have accessed.
National security nightmare, isn't it? Big hole. You can't even track where potentially your citizens' data may have been leaked to.
Yeah, we have no idea.
Like this,
we don't know.
We have an idea maybe where some of that data was going. Passwords were leaked, and within an hour, there was gigabytes of information exfiltrated up to Russian IP addresses. Now, I know you can't rely on IP addresses as attribution, but it just looked, that just looked so wrong. Now, we don't do conspiracy theories on Cybershow. We do a bit of political philosophy.
And that's why I didn't mention that,
Okay, well, we can always drop it, but it smells wrong to me.
We would absolutely view that as a problem. We did see that, and the only reason why some of that activity failed is because there are restrictions on accessing some government systems from non-US IP addresses. And so, like, those held in certain cases, but obviously, now that that has been reported, that will be the next domino to fall. That will be the next protection that they will actively try to undo. So after that, who knows?
And I have one positive to say about this, is even though they turned off all this logging, there were still people who noticed the stuff on the edges of it. So we noticed that there are these access attempts. We noticed that there were logs missing for a period of time. So not that I'm trying to give them ideas, but there's always ways, because we log so much data, because we pay attention. And it's not just we, like the US federal government. This is our life as technologists. We're looking for patterns. So there is a positive in this, that we're not gonna be able to figure out where it went necessarily, but we are gonna notice that it's happening. And we're gonna, as much as we can talk about it, that gets people's awareness up. So this is a minor positive in a really scary moment. The less positive thing I'm seeing is that was happened in early March. So almost 2 months ago from when we're recording here. And we think that they're getting more and more sophisticated, to Milo's point. So it's scary because we think they're getting more and more sophisticated. We also understand, as both of us have participated in hiring, that these people weren't hired for their ability to build, but more for their ability to do this kind of hackery type stuff, the network side, and apparently exfiltration side. It's not the first time that we've heard of data being taken out of an agency by some means. So this is not the first time, but what we're seeing is an increase in sophistication. So that's the non-positive side there.
You're listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk.
how do we combat that? So, you know, do we need to be doing the same thing? Do we need to be sending in people into these government positions that are actively watching what their fellow employees are doing? Is it that level that we're at now where we're going to see a lot more whistleblowing coming out because that's the only way that we're going to get some information back?
Yeah, there are people still in who are doing this. There's an activist organization that I'm affiliated with that is training federal workers to speak up and to openly defy. They are a part of the defense mechanisms. So part of it is a social thing. Yes, it's okay to stand up and be a whistleblower because being a whistleblower is dangerous. But if we have the population, the people who live here, support people standing up, people being in those positions, brave people who are still there and observing. Mm-hmm. And speaking up. Yes, that's part of it. And the other part is trying to figure out what exactly is happening. Like the stuff that comes out every day is like, I'm holy shit, what the f- is this? Like, how is this happening so fast? You're like, but knowing that means that we can then possibly patch it back up later.
That message of courage, I love. And I think that framing is so important that it's, you don't have to legitimize it. That's your job. That's your duty. That you already have a remit to do that. And our job as InfoSec cybersecurity people has always included the remit of watching insider threats. And insider threats are complicated, messy, difficult, but they're a huge part of what we do. And don't be intimidated away from discharging your duty.
Yeah, it's also naming it. Instead of calling them engineers, they're insider threats. It's saying that they are doing something, you know, it's not falling for it and calling it efficiency. It's garbage. It's not efficiency. It's something else entirely. And every time that I get a reporter who's like, well, how is this efficient? I'm like, it's not. Let's watch what they're doing. They are an insider threat. They are exfiltrating data. We don't know exactly what, and we can't prove it, but we know that this we have enough evidence to say that this data is leaving where it is. And there are rules, laws, policies that say that shouldn't happen. And here we are. So you name it. And then you say, this is not right, and keep saying it. That's how good marketing is. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Insider threat. Insider threat. That's what this is. Oh, you've got me covey engaged now.
Yeah, I agree with, you know, what you said about the you have the remit, and it's two layers because all civil servants in the US take an oath, and we say that we're going to defend the Constitution from enemies foreign and domestic. Like that's right there in the language that we all say when we start the job. But then at the cybersecurity level, a lot of the people who are working in the CISO office, the Chief Information Security Officer office, or in some way tangential to cybersecurity, ISC2 certified, you know, there's a code of ethics there. And one of the first things it says right at the top is like one of the canons is to protect society and the common good. Like, you know, it's very clear if you're going to be in a cybersecurity job, you have not just the oath, but you have a code of ethics that you agree to. Like the actions here endanger society and the common good. And so, absolutely, I encourage everyone who is at an agency, not just in the US, but around the world, who are seeing these kinds of things happen, should absolutely speak up. Like, we need to continue to support and laud and praise people and protect the people who are whistleblowers and who understand the risks that they are undertaking by speaking up. And we need to continue to empower journalists and keep journalists informed about what these things are that are happening and why it matters. One of the things that We the Builders has become, and I'm really proud of, is a conduit from people who have a really low risk tolerance to journalists who are doing really good work. We have been super duper excited about some of the stories that have come out and the detail that has been put out there. I really think Wired magazine, right from the jump, has done a fantastic job reporting on this. Mm-hmm. Fantastic sources. They have had a gift for explaining why this stuff matters in a way that's accessible. And I think that Washington Post, some of the people there have done a really good job. Kate and I have also been on a journey with some of these journalists who are very much out of their depth on technical issues and trying to help them understand. But yeah, I think that one of the other great pieces of work that we're doing is getting outreach from people who are still in government, who are like, this thing is happening. Talk about it to a journalist where I'm not comfortable, and we're able to collect the information and then give it to journalists. And I think that that's really important too.
If you are somebody who's in these roles and you're constantly being asked to do these tasks that you feel that are unethical, you know are unethical, you do have another power. You can leave your job. If you don't want to work with the journalist and you don't, you can just say, do you know what? I'm sick of doing this. Those tasks can only continue with such a skills gap if people are willing to fulfill those tasks. Society itself can police itself with those implicit rules or those unexplicit rules that we talk about with implicit.
Well, it can in the absence of fear, but what we're seeing on the fear, and when I posted saying, why isn't there an investigation team from the Pentagon like in there today kicking in doors and taking names, because they're scared. Those people who you would imagine are the last line of defense in security, their boss is the same boss that's doing all of this. And so, you know, overcoming that fear.
You're listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk.
The other piece of this is we've observed that they don't care about the errors they're making. So if somebody gets my social security number and I'm declared dead, what the hell am I going to do? Like, we've seen citizens get letters to self-deport. We have seen that they're trying to match data from two disparate mainframe systems. That's a big deal, right? So now you take the universe of immigrants, and we'll just go with, we usually have Central American immigrants in my area, so I'll just roll with very common names. Lopez, Rodriguez, like all of these names that happen all the time, on top of the Lees, the Greens, the Joneses, you know, the very common names that we have. And now you've got a long name, because a lot of Latin American names have a first, a middle, maybe two middle names. The mainframes weren't designed for that. So who's mangling those names and how are we matching them? We're gonna get it wrong. And then I'm on the death master file now. And what? Along with, you know, who? But mashing that shit, they don't care. They have shown us that they do not care whether or not it's right. They just wanna act and they're not thinking about the consequences. And the consequences are becoming more and more real.
Silicon Valley, move fast and break shit. Fine. You want to take down Twitter for the day because you rolled out some piece of... if you want to break a function on Facebook, whatever, fuck it, do it. I don't care. But when it's someone's ability to go to the doctor, that matters. But they don't see it as mattering because they are not thinking about it at the micro level. They are not thinking about it at the individual level. They just think that everything needs to move at this like warp speed. And they have all read 0 to 1 and they think that they are all the next Peter Thiel going to do something amazing. If you've spent more than a year in software engineering, building a system, you realize like a cold sweat about, I don't know if I want to do the matching this way. Like this, I don't want to put someone on the death master file. I don't want to shut off someone's health insurance, but they don't care. They're not thinking about that. It doesn't matter to them. That is part of the thing that is infuriating. Like, computers are great because they make work faster and they make work repeatable, and you can do all kinds of amazing things and automate so much. But that power and that ability comes with the necessity to be careful and to know what the fuck you're doing. You know, I do woodworking. I have a table saw that I use. I don't just like turn that thing on and like chuck wood at it and hope for the best.
It's like kind of a route as well, isn't it, to bring down a system using technology, as we were saying, especially if you're deleting your logs, because you're hiding your tracks and people don't understand what you've done. not only are you less connected to the systems or the people, like you're saying, that you're, you know, you're not seeing them, you're just seeing numbers or names on a page. But also it's a really clever way of coming in and shaking up a system in such a way that it's almost unrepairable without anyone knowing exactly what you did, because most people don't understand. So you start talking this to everyday people and they glaze over a lot of the time. They go, oh, that's just computer stuff. But it's not computer stuff. This is in our homes and our lives every day.
Yeah, this kind of fuckery or this kind of obfuscation of what's happening it's the next level up from what we normally see. When I'm a new employee at a company and I go in and start trying to edit some code, I'm like, what is this? Who did this? And you come in and you think, oh man, I'm gonna be able to fix this in a minute. And that's the easy level. That's where somebody just left and didn't leave enough documentation. Or you wrote it 6 months ago and you're like, that's my code. But there's this next level where they're actually obfuscating on purpose. So yeah, that's the one point I have.
You know, at the technical level, modernization and improvements is absolutely possible. We have this example that USDS worked on with another part of the federal government called 18F, which had a very similar function and kind of ethos, and was technologists who wanted to help modernize government at the IRS to build direct file. The way that you file for taxes in the US is an absolute mess. And it's complicated and it is frustrating, and it doesn't need to be. The IRS has almost all the information that they need to know how much you earned and how much you owe, and it could be a much simpler process. And people have for years wanted a simpler, easier process. And so a couple of years ago, IRS got started on it and built Direct File and launched it, and it was a massive success. And no one likes paying their taxes, and yet people who used the Direct File system actually were like, yeah, this was great. So it's possible if you are deliberate and you are thoughtful, you can build improvements into these systems. We could, for example, get rid of COBOL at SSA if we really wanted to. It could happen. So here is this model of better efficiency, better use for the American people at Direct File. And Doge wants to kill it, or has already killed it. We want to make things better and more efficient for the American people, but not that thing that actually makes it better and more efficient and easier for people and is an example of what they say they want to do. So yeah, the efficiency is a lie.
Efficiency is a lie. I love Direct File, but here's the thing. You're right. I see the chat, Andy. TurboTax did give money, or one of the people gave money to the inauguration fund. And all of a sudden, there goes the free filing service targeted at Americans, with the more efficient thing is now being taken.
Yeah.
A lot of them are leaving, like literally today. A lot of them are leaving government because they don't know what's happening. But we can do this, and we can do it well, and we can do it within the systems here, and we can rebuild this. We're not just here to give information. We're not here just to react. We also want to look ahead and say, how can we do this better? Because we know that these systems are damaged in ways that are hard to even figure. Like, where are the back doors? This is the hard part about cybersecurity. We don't know. But we know, because we've done it before, that we can build this and build it back better.
Well, we've had that in the last few years. I know we mentioned the NHS before, but it was absolutely eroded to the point where it was not functioning at all. And instead of just coming in and saying, well, we're just going to pump more money in, the new government was essentially elected because it said, well, let's change the way it's done. We all know in the UK that there's a large amount of money that disappears for corruption and inefficiency. It needs to change, but somebody actually needs to go in and do the hard work, which is where you go and you rebuild a system and you rebuild it better. You actually advance a system that's really old. I mean, that was built probably in the 50s and 60s, a lot of that. So it needs an upgrade. We need to fix it. We need to bring in technology to work for us, not alongside it. But that takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of people from all different backgrounds, all different areas working together. And that actually, that does help. It's brought us together as a community. There are people who are now working just on one thing collectively who are completely opposites to one another, but they have that same drive that the NHS is there important. And I guess that's how we fix it, is reminding people, what do you need to see in your society? What is the most important things for you? And how do you build back that has been taken? And how do you improve on that once you get it? So it's not just about, let's get back what we lost. Let's make it better, right? We lost it for a reason. The NHS was taken to that crisis point on purpose for a reason. Let's prevent that from happening. Let's build in resilience. Let's prevent it.
This is inspiring. I had heard NHS maybe 5 or 10 years ago was a real mess. What you're describing is possibly a model for us to point to and say, yeah, this was a mess, but look what we did since. And now our wait times are down, or whatever the metrics are that they're using to track. So I love hearing this, because some days it's hard over here.
Yeah, maybe when systems collapse or they're put under stress, it's just a way to highlight to us all that they need to be fixed, because it wouldn't have happened, right? So I see that in America at the moment. I see that generally, is that, yes, it is frightening and it's terrifying. But what it is doing is it's highlighting the holes in the system, the issues, the vulnerabilities that allowed it to happen in the first place. And I guess that's where our engineer brains come in. And we're like, well, we patch the vulnerabilities, right? We patch them with policy, with government rules and regulations, and actually stripping back some of those governments from those positions. Because that's another thing in the US that is highlighted as well in this talk, is that there are particular members of parliament that are in situations that they shouldn't be, essentially. You know, we lean here a lot more on civil servants and people in those roles. You guys have sort of your civil servants, but then there's a board which is elected every few years, depending on who's in power. Things can't work like the NHS on that level. It's a completely separate system that's funded by government, that's told what to do by government, but it doesn't have a government interfering on a really high level.
We didn't before as much.
No.
I mean, we had Watergate, and Nixon attempted to use the Internal Revenue Service to go after his enemies, or the people he perceived as his enemies. And laws came after that to separate the Internal Revenue Service from the Department of Treasury, in which it's housed. What are we seeing now? That erosion again. So the reaction coming is that we'll strengthen those. One hopes on my optimistic days.
You're listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk. Sponsored by Bunnaker Cybersecurity, maintaining digital realms.
Another thing I'm excited about is the people who've been fired, the probationary employees, a lot of them are under the age of 30. And they want to be in government. They're very civic minded. And they're being ushered out. But what happens when you're kicked out and you want to be there? You're coming back, and you're coming back stronger.
The guys above you've retired, and you're now the person in charge, and you're that angry, and you've seen that system collapse. All you want to do is move away from that. So there is that hope.
I will say too that we have seen a lot of the engineers that we work with, many of them are eyeing running for office in some way or another, because they are taking that engineering mindset with them, and they are like, we need to fix this thing. And I have this idea on how to patch this hole or to patch this problem. And I'm going to remove this norm and replace it by a law. And so they have pissed off all the engineers and told us that we are not essential. And now we are like, fine, we'll fix this. And so in my hopeful days, I think about them, and I think about them fanning out and re-entering in a different way to actually make sure this doesn't happen again.
I agree. Yeah.
Super excited about. Like, this shows people what government did, but this is not the way that we want to share this information in the future. We want to be able to talk about it and explain where the tax dollars go. This is not how I want it to happen. I don't like to think about people suffering as an opportunity.
No.
It's not what I want. And I will fight like hell in this moment with the people around me to lessen that suffering. But let's envision what the future really, what we want. And I want to inspire the people and make places for the people who have the next generations.
I'll just add, one of the things that I put on in my not hopeful days to renew my hope is Aaron Copland has a song that he wrote called Lincoln Portrait, which is about Abraham Lincoln. And it has text in the middle that is usually written by someone. One of my favorites is actually the version where Gregory Peck reads the quotes from Lincoln. But Lincoln says, "The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. We must disenthrall ourselves, and then we shall save our country."
Thank you so much for being with us on the Cyber Show today, Kate and Milo. And I am stoked and inspired. And I know that our listeners will be. I know that you guys have given not just a sober and thoughtful account of what's going on, but also a hopeful and inspiring one. And we want that message to go out loud and clear.
It's really great talking to you guys. It's great. Amazing. It's given me hope as well, because the news is just terrifying. And I use these guys. I'm like, kill me now. Every time I go onto it, they're like, horrible.
I'm sorry.